everyone. Thanks for stopping by. Red Eyes Radio is the name of this online independent alt-right radio program dedicated to the interests and health of our heritage, culture, people, and traditions, including our home, our soil, our mother, Europa. My name is Henrik from Sweden, and redeyescreations.com is the website, redeyesradio.net, to go straight to the radio archive. It's been a busy week, as usual. We have tons of things going on, and more than ever, it feels like. And we are also working on new videos and updates on the site, and actually another major upcoming event as well, a few months out. And I'll let you know more about this in due time, depending on how it all will come together. This will be an effort towards stepping things up significantly, and also to get you involved. You know, if you're able, capable, have the willpower, the time, the effort to dedicate, you know, to fight for our people and against the lying media and the destructive cultural Marxists that are trying to tear down our civilization, our people, and who we are. If you have talent, if you can dedicate some time, if you, you know what you're doing, if you can, you know, produce things, really anything, you know, do get a hold of us. It's better to reach out than not and see how we could, you know, fit you in some way. You know, get a hold of me, get a hold of the people here working at Red Eyes. And the easiest way is really our email for now, redeyescreations@gmail.com, R-E-D-I-C-E creations, redeyescreations@gmail.com. We do want to hear from you. We want to get you involved if you're a, let's say, writer, or if you check the news regularly and can post or can translate stories from your native tongue into English. Let us know. You know, if you're a producer, if you produce content, videos or radio, but primarily video, that's what we're looking for right now. Do get a hold of us. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, and YouTube, and you can send either Red Eyes or me, Henrik Palmgren, a message directly. However, I do prefer that you use email because, you know, we get so many messages and it just quickly kind of piles up and gets very disorganized, and we don't want to end up losing contact with you if you have reached out to us. So do, if you can, try email, redeyescreations@gmail.com. We have, you know, a lot of plans and new updates waiting to both get started but also get finalized. And, you know, you might be the right person for doing some extraordinary things here. And it's not all kind of carved in stone in terms of what we're looking for. We'd be willing to adapt depending on qualities and talent of the person contacting us, of us trying to find the right place in the chain, if you will, to step things up to a new level. So yeah, as usual, a lot of things are going on. We'll keep you updated on that as well. Well, today, ladies and gentlemen, we have a great show for you with three Swedish guys from Motgift, or Antidote, if you want to get the English version of that. We have Jonas Dier, Dan Eriksson, and Magnus Söderman with us. And we're going to focus on what has been happening in Europe over the last few months, really culminating now over the New Year's here in Cologne, Germany, and some other parts of the world as well. And really talk about what we can expect here in the year to come, 2016. If this is the norm, how are things going to, you know, go from here? And also in the second hour, we're going to get into talking about strategies and, you know, how to organize, what to do about this, and basically how to use the discontent that this generates and surf on that and also steer it in the right direction. 2016 is, I think, going to be a monumental year in this aspect. So let's do it right. But we'll begin at the right end here. I hope you enjoy the first segment. Well, it's great to have you with us, guys. Really appreciate you taking some time off. I know how busy you are with the live broadcasts over at Motgift, the radio show that you guys do. Now, Jonas, let's say hi to you first. You were with us in June, actually. I looked in the archive and I thought it was, what, around 3 months ago first? But that actually means it's almost 7 months ago since we spoke. It's it's going way too fast.
It is crazy, isn't it? Yeah, time flies. So, yeah, no, thanks for having us. So it's great to be back here, Henrik.
Well, thank you. And then we have Dan Eriksson as well. It's good to have you here. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I've been waiting a long time for this invitation.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's about, seven months ago then? I mean, if you knew about Red Eyes before, you know, we had the Jonas with us on the show.
Of course I did.
Well, we're always glad to hear that. Thank you. And then we also have Magnus Söderman with us. Hey, Magnus, thank you so much for coming on with us today.
Thank you for inviting. And this, I think, is the first time I'm a guest on a foreign pod radio show. So this is the first time for me. So thank you.
Oh, great. Nice. So that makes this also an exclusive interview then. Great to have you guys with us. Well, I wanted to speak about the coming year here in this show. I wanted to see if you guys have any thoughts on 2015 that we just left, you know, in terms of how things have changed and what we have to look forward to in the coming year here, 2016. You know, talking about strategies, where to put focus on the culture war, especially in terms of Sweden, but also Europe in general. We had the recent Cologne rape hate attacks, of course, by invaders here in Germany that we need to talk about a little bit later as well. And also kind of how that stands in relation to the wave of nationalism that we see on the rise in Europe. I know that you guys have also done an overhaul and actually redesign of the site lately, kind of a structure and whatnot of the radio show. And we also have a couple of other related sites between you three that we need to discuss a bit later as well. So we have a lot to cover today. But before we get to that, let me just ask Dawn and Magnus first if you kind of want to just introduce yourself a little bit, since we haven't had you on the show before. You know, tell us how you got involved in doing the radio show and you know, the website, and tell us a bit what kind of led you in that direction.
Well, it actually started with me having my own podcast, and I invited Magnus, that I didn't know personally. I read some of his works before and heard a few speeches, but I invited him to talk about his new book in 2011. We just found a really good chemistry and thought that maybe we should do this together instead. And then we searched for a third person, and we thought we can ask Jonas Dier. He will probably not have the time, or he thinks we are not important enough, or but he was ready, and then we started in March 2012 as a weekly podcast, and been growing ever since. Now we have a daily broadcast, and I think a total of 15 hours per week of broadcast.
Yeah, but I mean, the interesting thing with Motgift, I must say, was that we sat down from the beginning, the three of us, and said, okay, what should we do? And we said, we don't really know, but we like record when we sit and talk about things. And we didn't have a clue where it was going to lead. We didn't know what it would become of it. So we just started doing it. And we said from the start that we want to be ourselves, and we want to just talk on about these subjects. And I mean, together we have many, many, many years of experience in the nationalist struggle in Sweden and also in Europe. So we thought that maybe someone would like to listen to our inputs on these things. And that's how it began. So we didn't have any grand plans.
Yeah, so you guys have been going for you know, a few years now. Did you always do it live, or is that a more recent addition?
No, we started with a pre-recorded show for, like, I don't know, 20 or 25 weeks. And then I must admit it was mostly because I was tired of editing. So I said, okay, if we
broadcast it live. I know how that is, by the way.
If we broadcast it live, then there's like it's like a good excuse to not edit anything. And
that's
true.
Took
some work off my shoulders.
Yeah. That is true. It feels you have a more... You're kind of put on the spot in a different way, and you kind of step up to the plate and have to do it right. That doesn't always happen, of course, but you know, nonetheless, if you do it, if you pre-record it, you have the luxury of going editing afterwards, cleaning up and stuff like that. But that can take hours and hours on end to just do that, you know. So
yeah, no, and since then, I mean, we've been broadcasting live for 3.5 years, and now when we do a pre-recorded show, sometimes then you don't get the same. Yeah, the same kind of fire, so to speak. Yeah, it doesn't feel the same.
Yeah, the thing is that also the first years we were doing this, all of us did it on the free time, spare time. We had ordinary works and so on also. So it was late nights, and we also tried to have the blog working to fill it with articles and so on. We had some publishing also starting a little bit. But the last year now, we have been able to, thanks to all our great listeners and people who help us with money, we have been able to hire first me in the beginning of January this year, last year actually. And then also Dan was starting to work full time with this. And this is really when it's been exploding, the project as a whole.
Yeah, very good. I mean, that's great that you guys can expand. So listenership has been growing, and are people actually tuning in live, or is it mostly afterwards on demand that people get the show?
It's mostly afterwards. So I mean, a normal Monday evening, which is our main show, then we have around between 500 and 1,000 live listeners, and then about 10,000 downloads the next days. So, yeah, but it's still like speaking in front of 500 to 1,000 people every Monday evening. It's pretty fantastic. I mean, it's hard to get that many people into a conference or something like that.
And, I mean, right. Also, we have also, all the three of us, we have been speaking at demonstrations and conferences and so on during the years. And as Don says, I mean, it's sometimes hard to imagine the fact that when I was like I don't remember, we were somewhere in Germany, I think it was 10,000 people listening or something like that on a big demonstration many, many years ago. But now we can communicate to 10,000 people per week and give comments on everything that is happening in Europe and the world. And I mean, this is for us really, really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, another very important aspect on the whole project is, and this was sort of the aim from the beginning, was to show that, you know, because our perspectives on things have been so sort of demonized by the mainstream media and et cetera, just to show that, you know, we are sort of normal guys. We aren't overly aggressive. We aren't hateful or whatever they want to sort of make us out to be. So that you can actually sort of have a conversation on a weekly basis or even more often than that, about things that are very sort of controversial or tabooed, even. That was an important goal, and I think we've sort of accomplished that, I must say.
Yeah, I mean, this side is definitely gaining traction. I mean, in the meantime, the mainstream media is actually failing. You know, people are turning off from that. They're choosing their information from other sources and whatnot, and it's definitely spreading out in that direction. I mean, has this? Let's just kind of look at 2015 a little bit before we talk about the new year here coming up. But was that a big year of growth? I mean, I know that a lot of other shows and other websites that are kind of into these kinds of topics, they have been growing, you know, almost exponentially in terms of the listenership and whatnot. And I guess partially that is, you know, we can attribute that to the fact that things are getting so bad in the world in terms of the kind of topics we address.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
You know, so exactly. I mean, it's weird because we could say, well, it's the worse it gets, the better it gets, right? But it just means that it gets worse at the end of the day, so as things stand. But at least in terms of people that are willing to listen, right? That's on the increase, I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that we more than doubled our listenership last year. So it's been a great year for us.
It has. And I mean, not only that, our program, because we have different shows now. This is also new for 2015. The fact that we could expand not just with our show every Monday when it's us three now, but we also have a daily 1 hour. No, we had a 2 hour show, was it, Don?
Yeah, last year it was 2 hours. Yeah, news show hours, every day, yes, as well. And we have a sports show, we have a youth show with which is more comedy, I could say, but it's still political. We even have a show in English with a South African fellow. So we have many different kind of formats, yes, now.
And I mean, yeah, this happened because we started talking about, on the show, we started talking about the fact that we need more people doing this. We need more people with different interests. And we said it, I mean, if you like sports or if you like cooking or whatever, try to record something. We will help you with the technique. We will in different ways and you can use our platform. So a couple of guys just got in contact with us, our listeners, said, okay, I can do this and I want to do this and that. And this is how it just started. And this is also for me really, really nice to see, because I strongly believe in the that way of organizing things, you know, that it grows more naturally. That it comes from within, from the people who want to get involved, not that we say that you should do this and that, because,
it has to be driven, obviously, by people that have the desire, the willpower, and the means to do it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, the other shows are at least, you know, hitherto exclusively in Swedish,
sure, yeah,
we should say, but But I mean, so are most of the shows that the three of us do as well. Every once in a while, we do have a foreign guest on. But yeah.
Now, okay, just for people here tuning in as well, Motgift is the website, and that means antidote, of course, antidote to all the insanity, the madness, everything that we're faced with right now, everything that's happening in Europe, basically. But So now you've done a restructure. Obviously, you did, as you said, much more. Kind of regularly the same show, more or less the same structure of the show, but now you have different. So is it one like a major, like unique show on the weekdays, right? And there's like a news hour and stuff like that. Tell us about the structure a bit.
Right. There's one hour news show every day. And then in the evening is one unique show per weekday. So it's 2 hours normally. This is because we wanted to become something more than just a podcast. So we wanted to become really an online radio, so to speak, and to be a real alternative to the mainstream media. And now you can tune in at like 6:30 p.m. and you will have something on until midnight to listen to, and then you don't have to listen to the Swedish state radio or something else that's just destroying your brain.
Yeah, we need it too. You know, thank God we can reach out and do this kind of stuff. And yeah, you guys are professional. I mean, it sounds good. It's well, you know, put together and all that stuff. So yeah, very good job, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Well, is there anything? I mean, I wanted to talk about a bit about the new year here. Obviously, what you guys think we have not only to look forward to, but also in terms of strategy, really, in this culture war, where we should, you know, kind of put focus, where we should put time, what, you know, what works, what doesn't. It's a huge topic, of course. But is there anything that you could say in terms of that we should learn from in terms of what worked and what didn't work last year? Because if 2016 is going to be like 2015 or even worse in terms of the wave, the invasion that we've seen, we can suspect that this is going to be a trend that continues, right? And we have to not only surf that wave of discontent, we also have to, I think, steer it in the right direction. So any thoughts on this?
I can say that first of all, I mean, 2015 was a defining year. We must understand this. We have had a mass immigration for a long time, but it really swelled, as you say. I mean, this was an invasion. I mean, the only difference between this and a military invasion was that the guys, and it was men, young men, able men coming. The only difference was these people were not wearing uniforms or being armed. This is the only difference. The only difference between this and a military invasion in Europe. I mean, we must be on the clear with that. So this was a defining moment. And what has happened now is that the demography of Europe is changed. I mean, this is done. And these people who are here won't return. And we will see, as soon as the weather is getting warmer, we will see, I think I read the EU said that a couple of millions of people are waiting on the borders to come here. So this will happen.
I think the main thing to understand here is that this is not, as the mainstream media puts it, a refugee crisis. This is orchestrated from somewhere. And this actually sort of no investigative journalism or any sort of critical questions being asked about who are these sort of refugee smugglers and et cetera. I mean, the amount of people that have started sort of swarming into Europe, and they're normally sort of visibly, fairly well dressed. They're well fed. They come with iPhones and all the rest of it. I mean, these are not people who are fleeing for their lives. It's not.
No.
And you don't sort of flee from your life from Syria to suddenly end up in Sweden or Denmark. I mean, that's not the way it works. So I mean, this is an organized kind of thing.
Invasion, yeah, it's an organized invasion. And the thing is that they were in some countries, I saw that they were escorted by the host military. I forget if it was Slovenia or Slovakia or Croatia, maybe. I forget which country it was, but the host military was there. And I think the mainstream media was writing like, oh my God, there's military there. Almost like that. They're there to almost shoot them or whatever. No, this was there to protect them, to make sure that they could pass in. It reminded me of the Brown versus Board of Education in America, right? When they forced the integration. This is what it was like.
I used to be positive to sort of using the word invasion because I think it's fairly accurate. But in this case, since it is organized, obviously, by sort of other forces, and we have seen how other forces in the past have been sort of eager to change the ethnic and cultural makeup of Europe and the US and Australia, etc. I don't think we can say this an invasion really in that sense anymore. I mean, this is organized. These people are helped along by the powers that be.
Right.
Yeah, because we have seen, I mean, they have found brochures, you know, professional brochures, how to get into Europe and what is to expect. There are a website that have contact information for different NGOs where these so-called refugees could get in touch with them. Everything is, as Jonas says, organized. And I mean, it's not far-fetched that people like George Soros and others are behind this because they have been in the past and we know that they spend money on these kind of things. So there it is. And I mean, if we're going to be blunt about this, and we should be, I mean, we have heard over and over and over, we have a clip is out on the YouTube with Barbara Spector, a Jewish woman here in Sweden, who says that the Jews must take the lead in making Europe multicultural. We have the
Says that they do have a lead.
Yeah, they do have the lead. Yeah. And we have Jewish groups in Germany and other words who applaud this and say this is the way it must go. And everybody who is against this are Nazis and they are anti-Semites and whatnot. And still they support the state of Israel and the racist politics that are implemented there. So there you have it, or less. Of course, it's more. It's not that easy. There are other people involved. You have a lot of different structures working here. But yes, we have those who say this also.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really kind of concerted effort by the small group. I mean, we have in Germany, for example, there's politicians like Gregory Gysi, there's the activist Annetta Kahane. They were also very outspoken in terms of, you know, how they want to see the demography of Germany transformed, right? And there's others in other countries. We have Barbara Spector, of course, but we have also, you know, the NATO, former NATO general, Wesley Clark, you know, who's also Jewish.
It's even worse in France with you know, people like Bernard-Henri Lévy like that. So, I mean, it's the same thing in every country.
Yeah, this is also
thing. You can't turn a blind eye to this fact, no.
No,
and they have succeeded. I mean, the goal at least for this time, for what happened in 2015, was to. I mean, it's a little bit the last nail in the coffin in the sense that the demography is changed. I mean, we have 1 million officially 1 million in Germany during 2015. 1 million, and those are those that you know about. In Sweden, I mean, the numbers are. Also, I don't remember now how many, but we talked about 10 to 20,000 people per week.
Yeah.
I mean, and when we have those kind of numbers, then the demography is changed. So in 2016, we really need to think about which strategies we have to use in this new situation.
Well, yeah. And I think it's got to do with the fact that there's a lot of discontent in Europe right now. So they're trying to sort of quicken the pace, the powers that be, so that it shall be once and for all irreversible.
Yeah. Because we're talking about the transformation within one generation, right? We linked up a story here recently. Let me just read a couple of paragraphs on that. So the ongoing third world invasion of Germany will create a non-white majority in the 20 to 30-year-old age group within just 4 years, and a non-white majority within one generation This is according to official German census figures that was carried out by Kovacs from the Goethe University at in Frankfurt. You know, so yeah, that there you have it. It's one generation complete transform of the country.
And we see also, and this is quite interesting because this is Western Europe, Eastern Europe. I mean, Hungary and now Poland and other countries. They are, I think, they are looking at what is happening in Sweden and Germany, England, and so. And they are starting to. I mean, they still have the opportunity not to go where West Europe has gone. And hopefully they will be as staunch in 2016 as they have been. And everything looks out like this. So this is also something that we should have in mind when we talk about the new strategies for 2016 and what is going to happen. Because, I mean, many are now saying that the whole European Union is about to break up because Hungary and Poland and other countries are not accepting quotas and so on from the European Union, and this is very, very interesting.
Yeah,
if only,
if only. Well, it is kind of like the Soviet Union a little bit, right? That it feels like if this could burst literally at any. I mean, the powers that be, the Federalists, if you will, are trying to. They want to try to keep this together as much as they can. But I think a question which is so vital, such as this. I mean, that is something which could potentially break the back of the European Union.
Yeah, and it must break. You know, there is no doubt, and it shouldn't be in anybody's mind, that it will break. I mean, you can't, it's an unnatural state. It is something that is not natural to Europeans or to humans, I think, these big federalistic states, and it will break sooner or later. So hopefully sooner, because the more years that go, more and more white Europeans will suffer. So it's hopefully it will happen quite soon. But if it drags on, it will break eventually. It will break.
As we know it, but yeah. I'm not sure that it's going to sort of break. I mean, it might turn into something. It's already
it will implode
in many ways. Well, not necessarily. I'm not sure that the Soviet Union imploded, to be honest. That could have been managed from sort of elsewhere. We might see it sort of turn into some kind of really, really vicious dictatorship.
Yeah, it could absolutely happen. But in the long run, this is what I'm thinking about, is that these kind of unnatural states, they can't exist forever in the sense that it's not natural. So therefore, sooner or later, I mean, something must happen. But I rather see it sooner, because the alternative, as you say, Jonas, is a vicious dictatorship. I think it's a dictatorship that the world has never, ever seen. And this
we've seen it becoming more and more repressive already, and it's getting worse by the day almost.
Yeah, now they
definitely, I mean, by the year. So
if you look at it, the European Union, I mean, they have in their arrangements and everything, they have a consensus. I mean, they have a European military growing. They have a European police. They have the death penalty. I mean, this is
true.
And nobody knows about this, of course. And now they are talking about restricting gun more restrictive gun laws in the whole of Europe, as if it wasn't worse.
Bad
as
enough,
it is. And if you look at the structure of the European Union, it's the same as the Soviets. The same structure.
And I mean, these are not sort of crazy conspiracy theories. I mean, we must stress that. I understand that, you know, most listeners to this show are aware of that already, but we do have to sort of repeat that.
Let's talk about what we can expect here a little bit, and let's look at some of the things that have happened already. I want to begin with what happened earlier this year, and then we can move forward to what's happening here most recently. But you had these stories coming out in around these refugee centers, primarily in Germany, but this happened in other places too, of course. But there was rapes, there was violence against women, children. There were even reports of children being raped around these, or inside, I guess, of these refugee centers. And I don't forget who was to raise a good point before we started here, but I think it was Magnus or Don, but you said that basically this shows the mentality as well when they're willing to have, you know, to do this towards their own, basically, right? These are people that are there allegedly fleeing with them from these horrible conditions or whatever, and they're there even like turning on their own people. It shows how we might have a an opinion or like an idea that, oh, they're very kind of focused in their attempt. They're agreeing to do this or to that, but it seems much more kind of loose than that, if I can put it that way. It seems that they are, wherever you place some of these people, they will just lash out against anything or anybody that just happens to be in the vicinity, it seems like. It's just crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, first of all, you have, I don't know the figures, but maybe 80% men of all who are coming.
Yeah, 70, I think it was 76% in Germany.
Yeah, 76% are men in the best times of their lives, in that sense. I mean, they are between 20 or 40, something like that. And they are bringing with them their culture, their how they are back home, so to speak. And when they come here, we have seen the pictures, we have seen the clips from different hotspots. You have young, white, more or less always women, young and old, elderly women who are welcoming them with applause, with the big signs, welcome. I mean, they come here and are welcomed as rock stars, you know. And these are people who have fled from, not from war, they have fled from maybe poverty, maybe some, I mean, we had have people who have lived in Turkey for a couple of years and who take the chance now. So they are not leaving war and bombardments. And they come here and they are greeted like rock stars. And, of course, they read the news and they see this self-hatred that especially Western Europe is indulged in.
Yeah.
So what could we accept? I mean...
yeah, it's remarkable.
I just want to say also, when it comes to these so-called refugee camps in Germany, I was reading just the other day that last year more than 300 children are gone missing from these refugee camps.
Yeah,
I mean, and even those who are there with their parents, where are these children and what are they used for now? I mean, it's children under 12 years old. So yeah,
wow.
I mean, you don't want to think about it, but we have to. We have to understand that if this happens, as we said, if this happens in their own refugee camps, what will happen when these millions of people should be, as they say, integrated into our society? I mean, it's a catastrophe just waiting to happen. And we have seen what will be the future with certain Cologne, as you started talking about.
Yeah, let's go into that and talk a bit about that. I haven't had time to keep up with that story as much as I would like to. Is there anybody that has a good overview of what seems to have taken place? Because as usual, I guess it's the same as in Sweden, where they can put the lid on fairly quick, and you have kind of conflicting data. But we know something that has been happening, right?
Well, the thing is, I live in Germany, Magnus live in Germany as well, and I, of course, follow the German media. And, I mean, all this took place on New Year's Eve, but on the 1st of January and even on 2nd of January, was only the local newspapers were writing about this. And, I mean, on the 3rd of January, it came out in the mainstream, in the national media. And in Swedish media, it took till 5th of January before they even wrote something about it. And I mean, what happened there, I think we have never seen anything like that before. There were more, according to the police, more than 1,000 Arabs and North Africans, young men, celebrating, so to speak, New Year's Eve at close to the Cologne Central Station. And... it started with a knife fight. They attacked a few young German guys and cut them, all of them. And the police came. And when the police came, they started attacking the church of Cologne with rockets. Firework rockets.
Right.
And then they started attacking the police, and just hell broke loose. It was like, according to eyewitnesses, the police, they were just like in the 30 or 50 policemen there, and they could not do anything. And
So sorry, Dan, but did they attack the dome? I didn't.
Yeah, the dome. Yeah, of course, the dome church. Yes, okay. That was the
which
first.
Which is one
thing
of the
attacked.
Most sort of really iconic churches of
beautiful.
Europe.
And, yeah,
yeah. And that was the first thing. Even before they attacked the police, according to the eyewitnesses, they attacked the dome. And I mean, this is of course symbolic. I mean, they would not attack a mosque in that way. It was not just any building, so to speak. And this just carried on for hours, and it got worse. And they started attacking girls in groups of like 60 to 100 men, chasing girls that were maybe 1, 2, 3 girls. There were rapes, there were sexual harassments, beatings, robberies. I mean, all of this was happening, and it was going on for hours and hours, and the police could not stop it. They did not have enough manpower. They did not have the resources. The jail was already full. It was total chaos. And now there's more than 150 women who has been, what's it called, charging for rape or sexual harassment, and said that they are victims of this. And if you think about it, it's more than 1,000 people who organized are committing these crimes. And in the same time, at New Year's Eve, you had similar stuff happening, but in smaller numbers in Stuttgart, in Hamburg, where big groups of Arabs and North Africans, so-called refugees, were attacking mostly white women. And now that, according to the police, they got 15 of them or something like that in Cologne, who are now in jail, and they say all of them has been in Germany a few days or maximum a few weeks.
That's what I'm saying. Like they're not even placed like properly yet within the country, and they're like just lashing out at everything they can. It's amazing. We've seen that in other parts of Europe as well. It's like, because I wonder what level of organization this is at. I don't think it's actually any organization behind it at all. I think it's just you get enough of them together, and this is just what they do. It seems like.
You can look at their home countries. I mean, the only thing, I mean, there is a reason why you have Sharia laws. There is a reason why Saudi Arabia cuts the hands of people and, you know, all these things. Because, I mean, race is everything in a sense, and we must understand it. We can't look at ourselves and think that these people will be like we are. I mean, this is, this everybody should understand. And I saw one comment now, because there has been leaks in the police documents here from the Cologne attacks, and one of the arrested those arrested a guy, he says to the police, "I am from Syria. You must treat me well. Frau Merkel have invited me here." Yeah. I mean, this is.
Didn't they go sort of chanting "Ficken, Ficken, Ficken"?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Well?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, this is, you know, yeah, hundreds or perhaps even 1,000. Then young Arabs go chanting, which is, you know, the German F word, if you will.
Yeah.
But it's not a swear word in German.
Yeah, it would be like a dirty way of saying "let's have sex."
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah,
that's what they were chanting together, hundreds or thousands of them.
And it's difficult to sort of, you know, wrap one's thoughts around this. I mean, it's so crazy, and it's so different from European mentality. It really is.
This is also what we as nationalists has warned of for so many years, and I'm always sad that we are like prophets, knowing what is going to happen. But I mean, if we have a large enough concentration of these people, some things will happen. I mean, our countries, our Europe will be more and more and more like the Middle East or North Africa or whatever. This is how it will be. And the only way, and this is the problem, the only way to keep this without everything falling apart is with a more suppressive government. I mean, you can do one of two things. Either either you throw them out, you deport them, you do these things, you close the borders and have a homogeneous Europe, or you have a dictatorship. probably the most ruthless the world has ever seen. These are the only way to contain this situation. And it seems that they are going on number two and not number one in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the powers that be are very well aware of this, just as they knew that when they went into Iraq or Libya or Afghanistan, they would do much more damage than good. And I think that has been the idea all along. It's not. I mean, we've got some fairly sort of naive people around, and then we have self-serving politicians and what have you. But I don't think that the sort of architects behind this craziness that is going on. It's not really craziness as such. I mean, this is created by design. It really is, and we have to sort of understand that. Yeah.
One thing that they have tried to make Europe forget since 1945, and that is that race matters. Race matters a lot. And they have tried to make us question even the existence of race in Europe, and especially in Sweden. And when you think that everybody is alike, and you do, then you're not prepared. And that is the big problem for Europe.
The horrible thing, Magnus, is it started way after 1945.
You're right.
Yeah, no, I don't think, you know, in 1965, most people wouldn't have said that, no, that's got no relevance whatsoever. I mean, we're all alike and et cetera. In 1975, yeah, I think.
Yeah, you're right. But I mean, this is very gloomy, everything, of course, and so on. But we should also be, and this is something we try to stress on our radio show, that it's also a blessing for us to live here today, because we are living in changing times. We are living in times that everything is. I'm thinking sometimes about the what's the book about from Tolkien, you know, where the two big powers are finally confronting each other over this big thing. And I for my part is happy to be living in these times, because I will see this happen. I will be a part of this, and I have the opportunity to fulfill the destiny that the Creator has put on us and me. And this is why we should be, in a sense, happy about living now, because we have the opportunity to do something.
Yeah, it's the great battle, the great strife of our time. Let me just play this clip here.
Doctor, say, make this. I sleep 3 days in hospital.
Yes.
Because this is a problem.
What was the problem?
Problem here.
Points to the balls.
There.
Exactly. Yeah. Balls, it's very big. Like this. It's
your
big.
Balls.
Really? He said make sex with anyone or make anything.
Make sex with anything or anybody.
Yeah.
Balls are very, very, very big. Yeah. You know, so.
Yeah, this is the biggest problem for them.
This is interesting that he says make sex.
Make
because,
sex, yeah.
Yeah, because on New Year's Eve as well in Sweden, in the city of, I think it was in Kalmar, on the East Coast, there was one so-called refugee that harassed a girl, and she was filming this with her mobile phone, and he was saying exactly that. Can I make sex with you? Can I make sex? Make sex? Yeah. It's, I don't know. Maybe that's in the first thing they learned to say in English or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, since both Canada, I think, and Canada and Norway, and I think Denmark has been starting to have courses for these new arrivals to learn them not to rape. I mean, this is for real. The government of Norway, I think Canada, and I think Denmark have courses for immigrants to learn them not to rape.
Well, I think my brother, he's pointed out one time, even like some of the things that's in the Quran or whatever, and there are instructions even on what hand to wipe your ass with, right? I mean, this is how instructive this religion is. And I think there's something to that, which you said before, in terms of, I mean, this is the misconception with, like, let's say, Western governments and Syria, at least on the official level. We know that there's much more going on behind the scenes there, but we stand, you know, the Western world, and say, oh my God, this leader is suppressing his people. He's, you know, wicked. He's having a you know, it's not a human rights issue in terms of how they deal with their prisoners, etc. But it's like, these people know that they have to rule with a hard, you know, with a fierce attitude and a hard fist, basically clenched fist. Otherwise, if they don't, this is what has historically happened in these countries, and we just don't get that. People in the West don't get that.
And that's why, as Jonas frequently says, and this is important, that is why we have seen the wars from the US, Israel, EU in those parts of the country. That is why, they got rid of Saddam Hussein. That is why they got rid of Muammar Gaddafi. That is why they tried to get rid of Assad. Because those people could rule these people. And now, we can see what is happening.
And they're very little. This was very much about sort of making the Middle East safe for Israel, right?
Yeah, sure.
And they've been shouting off the top of their lungs for almost 10 years now that the U.S. should go to war with Iran. Mm-hmm. But there's very, very little concern about this so-called Islamic State or Daesh, and that is actually very, very strange.
Or Saudi Arabia,
yeah.
No. But I mean, they've been allies all along. But you know, if you've got this,
if it was a human rights issue.
Saudi
Arabia should be first on the list.
I mean, that's complete BS, obviously. But the Israelis are very, very little concerned about this throat cutting.
They're treating their freaking higher ups, right? They're letting them into some of their hospitals and taking care of them and sending them back.
We talked about this in a show earlier. We didn't go to the bottom of it, but it's interesting to see that the geographic area that ISIS is working in, their caliphate, as they call it, it's more or less the same area as Eretz Israel, Greater Israel,
exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, that could be a coincidence, of course. It could be, but as Roosevelt said, nothing happens in politics by coincidence. And I beg to agree with him in that.
Yeah, it's amazing. Exactly. There are references in the, I guess it's the Old Testament, where, you know, what area they are that is divinely given to them, right? And so this is being fulfilled right now. Because look at it. I mean, who wants to stay in these areas now? If they can go to the West and if they can have, you know, get new iPhones and selfie sticks and, you know, what's the incentive to go back, right?
No, and I mean, the poor guys in ISIS, when everything is done, when the Christians are left and all these refugees, so-called, has left, okay, then you maybe have a couple of thousand or 100,000, I don't know, ISIS soldiers. And I mean, it's no problem for Israel, the U.S., and whatever, to crush them in a couple of weeks if they want to.
Yeah.
So someone is waiting on something to happen before they crush ISIS.
Yeah. No, I mean, we've been saying that all along, that, you know, certainly Israel could have gone in and wiped these people out. And they're normally so, you know, paranoid that it is really amazing that they haven't. I think France could have done it. I think certainly the UK could have done it. And definitely the US could have done it a long, long time ago. But, they've let these people,
Well, I mean, incompetence is not a valid excuse in this case when it comes to military might and if they wanted to. I mean, so this is allowed to happen. This is just, I mean, and this is, of course, kind of the catch-22 here, too, that the more unstable some of these regions are, the more immigrants we'll get. And the more problem will be for us. And then that is, you know, better for Israel, et cetera. And look at some of these immigrants that have tried to get into Israel. They've been given money to go to Sweden. Never return to Israel. Here's like $2,000. We'll pay for your flight ticket. Go to Sweden because they'll welcome you there, you know?
And look at the rich oil countries as Saudi Arabia, you have Qatar and whatever.
No international pressure is put on them whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's so obvious, so yeah.
But maybe they don't need diversity.
They're already diverse, see, because they're non-white, right? So diversity means being non-white, right? So if you come into a room and say, oh, it's so diverse in here, that means there's no white people around. That's all it means. Now, headline for you a couple of days ago, Husby, right? This is a suburb to Stockholm. Yeah. Husby center, the central area, gets feminist urban planning. The new urban planning for Husby center will make the areas safe and more accessible for women. This means that the men's, sorry, I'm translating this from Swedish directly over to English. That's why I'm stuttering here. That means that the men's coffee shops will have to be relocated and moved, right? So, okay, so does the men in Husby have their own coffee shops? Wait a minute. That's not Swedish culture now, is it?
No, it's like, not. No, but I mean, hardly. This is, I mean, for the American listener, they must understand that Sweden as a whole is like the worst liberal university that you have, maybe Brown, or I don't know what the name is. But this is like the worst, I mean, the whole of Sweden is like this. And because you read crazy stories from America also with the sex change and gender and so on, so forth and so on. But it's not the same because in Sweden, the whole, that's state politics, more or less.
Mm. Yeah, so, state so feminism.
And this is what they are doing. They are trying to transform a suburb.
And this is like an immigrant ghetto, more or less.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which makes it I mean, I think you know the word here is you know the Swedish society is sort of monolithic culturally, in a way that American society isn't still, or American culture isn't. Even though sort of political correctness might be completely dominant in America as well, it is, I know, but it's not as bad as it is in Sweden, because there's really just it's one way or no way.
Absolutely, I mean, and I really think genuinely that they think that they can actually change, Muslim culture as well. I mean, in some cases, of course, they don't, right? But they have this layer of like trying to bring feminism to like, you know, Arab women, basically. So it's like that we import these people from this vastly different society, and then we can just impose our set of rules upon them and make them turn them into good little liberals, right?
This is why we at Antidote Motgift always talk about the war against reality, and this is what they are doing. They are having a war against reality, and we must stand up for. And this is so strange that you have to say that, but we have to stand up for the real world, the reality of how things are. And they are having this war, and it's been going on for many years, of course. But this is really breaking through in Sweden, especially because, as we said, we have had like 10,000, 15,000 foreigners every week, and the state are still discussing how to gender neutralize the public service, maybe, or some other thing, that you should not say he or she, you should say him. And that's even more fun for the English speaking listener.
Yeah, I know, it's insanity, but they are insane. I mean, they're destroying everything. I mean, these people will lead the world to utter ruin. They will destroy civilization to try to impose their unrealistic vision of it. I mean, but they have also, in that instant, you know, voided themselves of any kind of legitimacy into leading, a country or leading politics. I mean, they will have to be removed, and these people that are in our countries, they will have to leave. That's the only option here.
Yeah,
we agree completely.
Yeah, and the thing is that it will happen, because this kind of unnatural things can't go on. But the question is, will it be the newly arrived Muslims, these 1 million in Germany, a couple of million, I mean these millions in Europe, will it be those people who do it, or will it be a nationalist, traditionalist opposition? That's the question.
Yeah.
The question is not if the question is when or and who and that's, I mean, that's logical.
Well, actually, let's get into that in the second segment here, in terms of nationalism that's sweeping across Europe. You know, how can we utilize this? What is some of the dangers that you see in terms of rising together with this kind of right or nationalism within Europe? They're very many parties are very Israel friendly, you know, etc. They're not saying a peep about Zionism. There's a huge issue here. We'll get into that in the second segment. But let's talk about some of the websites now a little bit before we round up here. I know you, Jonas, you have a new publisher you want to mention. You guys setting up a shop as well. But tell us first about Motgift Antidote and what people can, tune into and what they can hear over there, guys.
Sure. So the main page is motgift.nu. But I mean, this is in Swedish. So I guess if you don't understand Swedish, it wouldn't make much sense to you. And if you understand Swedish, you're probably already listening.
I hope you are. And if you're not, yeah, tune in. Yeah,
exactly. And then we're also, in the middle of January, we're launching a new online shop that we will be selling clothing, jewelry, books, and yeah, many other things coming. And this will be in Swedish and in English. And we will have free shipping worldwide. And it will be on, it's called Barritrad, barritrad.com. It's BARRITRAD.com. And that's from our slogan, on the barricade for the tradition, Barritrad.
Ah, there we go. I was going to ask about that. Right? Yeah, there we go. Explains it.
And we have also created a coupon code for all you Red Eyes listeners. It's very easy. It's just Red Eyes, and then you get 10% off your first purchase from Barritrad.
Oh, nice. Well, that's nice of you guys. Thank you. And so what are some of the things you're going to have there? Some clothes and stuff like that? Is there other things you have planned, more additions to the shop and stuff like that later? Or where do you guys want to
We have some plans. Now it's mainly clothing and books, but we have some other plans as well, but we're keeping them a bit secret right now.
All right, sounds good.
The competition is fierce.
We'll have, of course, the links up to this. Now, Jonas, tell us about the new publishing house, I guess, that you're working on.
Yeah, no. I started last year, and it's gotten going. It's called Reconquista Press, and the website is reconquistapress.com. We've only published one book so far, which is a book by Léon de Poncin, who's a French counter-revolutionary researcher, basically. And it really is a classic, I would say. I mean, one might not sort of concur with everything he says, but he was very had sort of an attention to detail, and he was very thorough in all he did. And I guess that's what we're gonna do. It's a publishing house that's gonna be in three languages we have planned so far. I'm working with a French guy. So it's going to be stuff in English, French, and Swedish, mainly in English and French, I think. So, and in sort of the if you will, Catholic nationalist counter-revolutionary kind of tradition, which was pretty radical, actually. So, you know.
Yeah, and you guys, you were kind enough to send me a copy of the first book you guys have out, State Secrets, as you mentioned. And this is really something that's, that fits, I think, our audience as well. We've been talking about secret societies and Freemasonry and the kind of the shenanigans behind, you know, locked doors, basically, for many, many years. And I was actually not too familiar with this author before, I guess it's a little bit before our time. But he really connects it, of course, with... as many actually have done Judaism and Freemasonry.
This book that we published, I think it came out in French in 72. It was the last thing he wrote, if I remember correctly. But the first book he wrote was in the mid-20s, and it was a book called Jewry and Freemasonry. So, yeah, I think it would connect with your...
And it also has this book also has a great preface by Dr. E. Michael Jones that I can.
That's right,
exactly. Yeah. Thank you for who's also very familiar to your listeners.
That's absolutely right.
A great guy. Yeah,
for sure. Okay, well, some websites here then, folks. ReconquistaPress.com, Barritrad.com. We'll have that link up, and don't forget the coupon code Red Eyes for 10% off. That's very nice of you guys. And of course, the main website is Motgift.nu. That's Antidote. And if you do speak Swedish, head on over there and check it out. All right. Well, thank you, guys. Let's take a short break here. We have much more to talk about in the second segment. Much more coming up. We'll be right back. Don't miss the second hour. More with the Motgift guys is coming up. We talk about strategy, what to change and implement in 2016 to turn this in the right direction. We speak about the positives and negatives with the nationalist parties in Europe and, you know, basically what is encouraging and what is dodgy about some of their policies and about those who have nestled their way into this side of the political option, or should we say opposition. Jonas also asks me about Trump, too, by the way, so I share my thoughts on that. So tune in for much more. RedIceMembers.com, over 1,000 shows to stream and download. We also have videos, films, inside episodes, and more. We have a 3-month recurring one as well. Support independent media and make sure we can step up the game and take this to a new level. Don't miss it. We'll see you on the other side of this break. Thank you so much for listening.